that was my third time in Vumitri 1-4. So hopefully good things would come doing in 3-1, from 3-1-4 in Max Building. Today we are going to be handling skills development in the energy sector. I'm sure everyone does look forward to that, because we can talk about sustainability in the energy sector, we can talk about affordability, accessibility, but at the end of the day, amongst other fundamentals is who does that? And quite clearly, this is one of the sectors in our economy or socio-economic being as a society that's skills intensive, highly skills intensive. It's even reflected in the department itself, you know. Unlike you see in the Department of Health, which has no less than 3,000 members or staff members, which are a mix, of course, there's a lot of highly skilled people as well, you know, public works, mix. Yeah, smaller in numbers, but demanding in skills. It therefore behoves on us to ensure that not only as the parliament, not only as the department, not only as the rest of the government, but also outside government, we be seized with ensuring that there is adequate skills at all levels, at policy making, conceptual, engineering, at maintenance and installation, right, at all those levels. Hence, we find that people are going to take us through today, come from different, sectors and undertakings. And I must be quick to say that this is not the last honorable members. You know, when preparing for this, one realized that there could still be more players here. A good example is that we've missed two sitters, the construction sitter, which has a role to play, and we're also informed by the Department of Higher Education that with the retail sector, oh, by SAPIA, sorry, Wamsak, apologies, SAPIA, that we should pull in the retail sector. So that immediately should sink in our mind that we would have the honorable members a second bite when we're looking at what exactly is going on in the skills development in this area. What is the status quo, and how prepared are we for the future, ranging from hydrocarbon through to, the gas, renewable energy, up to nuclear sectors. All of those we should look into. The municipalities, who play a very, very significant role in the distribution industry, all of that should be looked into, and we should have a good sense as Parliament as to what is happening there. I trust and hope the presentations will allude from time to time to any gap analysis necessary on policy issues, legislative challenges that have been or would have been identified. I don't remember, my concern is that the department indicated that they wouldn't be in a position to present. I haven't made up my mind in responding to that. I just would like to do a little bit of consultation and checking exactly whether it really is appropriate that the Department of Energy wouldn't have made any input in this area, because it's this area. If we are to say this must be sustainability in supply of energy, and that's the competence of the department, by extension, then it should ensure that there is adequate skill development or provision thereof in various ways. Of course, I will address that not today, but later down the line. As for now, I hope everyone is ready, and we want to have the energy sitter coming. But before the energy sitter takes us through its overview on the energy sector as a whole, let me get the committee secretary to give us the apologies. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. The following apologies: Honourable Ross, who's attending the Standing Committee on Finance; Honourable Ferguson, who's attending a meeting of the Portfolio Committee on Water and Environmental Affairs; Honourable Khadebe, who's currently abroad; and Honourable Greyling also indicated that he's attending the Mineral Resources Portfolio Committee, but he will be joining us later, Chair. Those are the apologies.
Honourable Khadebe is abroad, but I just saw him this morning when I got into the premises, you know, with his bags. Yes, I don't know which abroad is it. Yeah. Okay, shall we invite the energy sitter to take us through? Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Ganyi Sangoveta, and acting as the CEO of Energy and Water Sector. Firstly, we would like to pass the apology on behalf of our chairperson. We invited to come with us, but he has had commitments which were taking him out of the country. What I will go through quickly would be the just the background and the progress made on the issues that were raised in the August 2010 meeting, which will then just be an overview of those. And all the other relevant information relating to that after that would be highlighted. Should the committees need further details, we can provide that. Okay. From the minutes, it was raised that there was an issue about the governance structures within the Energy and Water Sector. Since that time, the Energy and Water Sector was put under administration. Through that administration process, the issues that were raised were about weak corporate governance, the performance, and the overall effectiveness of the sector. We were then put into administration in September 2010. Subsequent to that, the administration process had about three phases. Phase one being stabilizing the organization through that process. The next phase was then about the recovery phase, which was putting the organization back into operational mode. And then thirdly, it was then we're going into the performance phase, which then started in April 2011. During the performance phase, the minister then appointed a new board, which is comprised of labor, organized labor and organized business, and then the three ministerial appointees. Yeah. And then there was a new constitution that was then adopted, and we were then focusing on implementing the resolution of the administrator at the time. The other main thing that happened during that time, one of the C code was then transferred from Energy and Water Sector to the Construction Sector. With the C code relating with electrical contractors. The achievements that resulted from that administration process were then relating to the financial management. That was one of the main issues that was raised through that process. Even in your minutes, you were also raising issues around that. What has happened subsequent to that is that in the past two financial years, Energy and Water Sector has been able to receive an unqualified audit opinion from the Auditor General, though there are areas of emphasis that we still have to work on and improve on our control environment. There was also a slight improvement on the compliance with laws and regulations after the administration process. And when we look at the areas of focus moving forward, it talks about us improving on our performance targets, the actual performance reporting, which talks about performance reporting throughout the sector, and then the general controls internally within the organization so that we can be provide value to our stakeholders. Just some stats relating to the achievements made or during the past few years. I just summarized a few which you have raised before. The artisan development, we've had about 1,700 people registered and 1,000 completed. You will note that this take about 3 years, so the numbers that completed will be coming from prior years. On the workers registered in the last financial year, the number was quite low, 139. Those that completed were about 681. There was also an issue raised in the minutes that related to how are we dealing with the wireman licenses. In the last period, we have issued about 649 wireman's licenses. When you look at learning programs interventions within the energy sector, so what we did was to split it, because we have got water and energy, so we then split it into the water to look at the highlights. These are the numbers in detail, which then shows, I won't go to each and every one of them, but it's just to note that, as you had noted before, that there was a focus on electrical engineering and those training. That continues to be still the same. Maybe the one area which was had a little bit of improvement was power plant operations. Through the minutes as well, there were also questions asked about the projects, the special projects which were there. Those special projects related to about five of them, which was the Loiso project, and it has been completed. The numbers that are there talks about the learners that actually registered and those that had completed. So the pass rate was quite high, close to 68% pass rate. And then the Tabombeki project, which was also part of the questions, then that project was completed with all the 50 learners. On the Northwest, this was done in phases. Out of those phases, 474 learners have completed that project. Out of the 804, the other 2,000 happened in prior years, so we have not taken care of that debt. The last one was about the Kuka project. That project was aimed at delivering about 1,200 learners. These are then they have completed, but the intention was to take them all through to level 4. The completion rate there is from level 2. And level 3 has been high, but level 4 is still low. We have made efforts with the Kuha to ensure that the learners are in the actually complete, and we were going to take them through to the artisan program so that they can be trained and then they can get their qualification as artisans. This is about the financial information. It might not be that clear, but here we're just showing the information that the CETA has in terms of revenue, collections of levies that it has. Our revenue is still relatively the same. We collect about between 160 and 170 million in a year when you look into that. And for us to manage the organization, it ranges between 19 and 20 and 22 million, which is a constraint, as you will see moving forward. The challenges that we face as an organization, you note that some of these things will then move from previous periods. If you look at the control environment, the organization before it was put to administration had disclaimers of audit opinions, which was an indication that within the control environment they could not even provide information. So this then creates a backlog in terms of clearing that. And then also talks to the clearing of backlog of certificates. when you look at also the capacity within the organization, this talks to the financial resources. As I've said, we've got about 170 million. And then the SIC code transfers that happen within the CETAs. When the issues around the backlog and the issuing of certificate, this continues to cause a lot of conflict between us and the our stakeholders, though we are working on these ones. As an example, between the April and August, we had a backlog of about 1,600, and we've been able to clear that to almost 1,000 of those certificates. But while it is an achievement, but we have to work a little bit harder in ensuring that all that backlog that is there has been cleared. And this is some of it could become historical, and some of it would rise as a result from the current weaknesses that we have as an organization. And then to move to the next level, after having seen the background and about where we are coming from quickly, here we're just looking at the focus areas, so I just wanted to then look at what do we then do moving forward as a CETA. As an organization, we start to then look at saying how do we then get to measure the organization and provide the right value for what we do. We then look at education and training outcomes and look at social outcomes. And say, for us moving forward, we need to be measured. These will then be the criteria of how then we need to be measured. This relates to focusing on the skills and critical skills, how well have we enrolled people there, and how has been our pass rate moving forward. In terms of your social outcomes, this looks to your transformational gender issues relating to gender, race, class. So,
excuse me. Just the slide that we. Okay.
What we then done is then we then looked at our organization and say where do we then need to focus. We do strategy sector skills planning and in looking forward, and then we look at our ETQA as a function, ETQA being the education and training quality assurance functions, where we then look into that and say, for us to be able to address all our challenges faced within our sector, we need to make sure that our learning programs are aligned to our ETQA activities. Our projects, we can be able to then move it into the, align it to the ETQA so that when we're focusing on things like your recognition of prior learning, SMME and project management within the sector, we are able to link it to a well-developed ETQA function, and then we should then service the sector. Because of time frames, I will not go through the whole list. I will then move to the next one. Can I still go on? Oh, right. In terms of the major drivers that we've looked at and which are aligned to the SIPs, the Strategic Infrastructure Project, the sector is working with the other stakeholders, including ESCOM, on SIP 8 and SIP 9 and SIP 10. And we are part of the committees that are looking into how do we then plan the skills development within the SIPs, so that we can achieve the maximum benefit throughout the processes. Okay, I think we can pass on this one. On the priority skills interventions, what we have then looked at is saying, though we have limited resources coming out of the SSP when you look at the numbers that are there, and we also need to compare that to the training needs that are within our country. In achieving that, we need to do some collaborations with our institutions of higher learning, with other institutions that provide training, but also make sure that there's a return on investment. Because when you look at what we have done as CETAs, is to put in money for training like your discretionary grants, but we don't go back to look at the impact of the training that we have done. We also have to come up with innovative training methods, because when you look at the NSDS 3, it has changed from the normal what you used to have when you're chasing target. We are now looking at how best we can address the training moving forward. Part of it talks to the short-term processes that we look into, and short-term interventions, look at those formal and informal interventions targeted on those people on the job, like on the job training, coaching and mentoring, and then looking at the long-term in terms of those that are on the formalized program, which should take longer than a year. And as well as to building the HRD capacities within ourselves and within the employer, the sector that we are working under. Okay. We also had, during the discussion that we've had currently with our SSP as we are updating it, we've had the discussions with the focus groups within our sector. And these focus groups have highlighted issues that relate to how the CETA it must play a leading role in skills development, in streamlining the pipeline between all institutions of higher learning, and then developing research internally so that we can be able to identify what are the skills gaps and how we can address them, as well as to influence the career guidance within basic education, because as people move into our area, if they still have the challenges, then we are not able to progress as quickly as we can. In preparation for our sector skills planning and the next phase, whilst we have done the consultations with Department of Energy and the stakeholders there, including NEXA, we then need to do a consultative process, which involves us going out throughout the country and getting and engaging with our stakeholders. And the next one will then be then to revise those stress plan and annual performance plans to make sure that they are relevant to the sector. The expected outcomes out of that will then be to ensure that the skills planning in our sector is developed and is in line with the sector. We also then have to look into the closing the gap between the supply and the demand, because from where we are sitting, there is a high demand for the skills, though the supply side has been relatively low. Okay. The sector skills planning is in the first phase of development, so we're then going to be moving to the next phase. Okay, that will then be in the end of the program.
Thank you very much. But you didn't introduce the other gentleman, were we?
Okay, sorry, my apologies for that. The gentleman next to me is Mr. Mota. He is our Chief of Operations. The next one is the CFO, Timothy Lepota. And then the next one is from Department of Higher Education, which will be Mabuza Ngubane.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I'm sure you'll appreciate there's some tightness of time because we've got a couple of presentations. NERSETA, if I can just highlight the need to stick to the 15 minutes allocated. Mm-hmm. Of course, the gentleman from the Department of Higher Education, if at any stage in time you'd like to add on to both sectors, they're welcome. Please.
Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members and fellow colleagues. As the CETA, we are not as directly as the energy CETA involved in energy, but however, we are involved.
And here, Mr.?
Oh, sorry, I didn't introduce myself. I do apologize. Thank you. My name is Raymond Patel, CEO of the Mercita, and together with me is our COO, Wayne Adams. I do apologize. I think they're introducing myself that way. We'll do a brief overview of what we do as Mercita. In that brief overview, it's also looking at our sustainable green skills development as a CETA. Today, because I was called here, we had to postpone a signing agreement with GIZ, the German, so we'll do it this afternoon when I get back, where we're doing some work with the GIZ around green skills and for other, bringing CETAs together. We looked at the traditional ways of enrolling a learner into different programs that what we sponsored. I will give you a brief overview of that also. Chair, our overview starts really from, and it's a bit different from the package here, but I'll run through these slides very quickly. We had to change midway to what we were doing when we started our SSP. And this is informed by the presidential or the infrastructure program that is happening currently and the need for skills. We realize it's a 5-year identification of priorities, a development of a 20-year project pipeline, developing objectives for skills localization, empowerment, research and development that we've got to do. We've got to expand maintenance of new and existing infrastructure, so we need skills for that. And we have to improve infrastructure links, rural and the poorest areas, so there's specific skills for that too. What we've developed in Mercita is what we call Training for Rural Economic Empowerment, a TREE program. It's quite different than training people in an urban area or people in a township. You don't want, and I can see Chair, let me clarify that. When we train somebody in Kofimbamba, we don't want the person to come to East London to be trained in an urban setup and never go back. There are specific words.
Why Kofimbamba? What about my own village, Kobakop?
I just used one chair, it came quicker to mind. We also want to address the capacity and constraints and improve coordination and integration. And we've got to look at the scale of investment in infrastructure. Now, Chair, and I think most CETAs will face this, is that we do not have the funding for doing most of these programs, if one can say that. The infrastructure development program is 802 billion rand, and money would only be paid later in some of the programs. So the cost of training people will be at the cost of a CETA, which is the funding is not there. Just a quick picture showing you where these the setup there and what's going to happen. For us, it's looking at that enabling socioeconomic program, the catalytic program, which is unlocking that mineral belt, it's unlocking the Gauteng corridor, the southeast node, the Sultana Northern Cape corridor, the cross-cutting, the SKA, the Meerkat, and so on, school development program. These are the programs that where we see Mercita getting involved much more. I'm not going to go through the different SIPs. I'm sure members of parliament have gone through this. They know this. Very quickly, the 17, and I'm informed there are 18 different SIPs now. So in these SIPs, one particular of note to this house is the green energy in support of the South African economy, the electricity generation to support socioeconomic development, and electricity transmission and distribution for all. And this is where we see where we need the different artisans and so on. Chair, what is a CETA? I've put the slide up specifically getting us focused again, what we've got to do. If we look at the left-hand block, I think CETAs, firstly, we have to look at the CETAs play just two spaces. It's a social imperative and it's an economic imperative. Now, looking at the universities, we've got to work with universities to get the necessary engineers out to do the academic research and leadership program. We look at our FET, our technical vocational education training centers or colleges. They're responsible for technical vocational education. And we must get the colleges to focus on that. Therefore, the CETAs have to play a role of workplace integrated learning, access to careers, labor market dynamics and analysis, employment sustained and employability skills for entrepreneurship, socio-economic transformation platform. We cannot do this, and I want to emphasize that, Chair, when I say we play an economic imperative role and we play a social role. The economic imperative role is that we've got to train people for the skills that are needed. The social imperative role is that we have to realize there's a legacy of untrained people, whether they were black, women, that those are important aspects, and we have to start training and doing that. We cannot do this without business, industry, and government institutions. Chair, we had quite a remarkable success under NSDS2. We achieved 26 out of the 28 indicators, and those 26 indicators that we've achieved was over 120%. We've had for 11 years.
Perhaps you mean NSDS3?
SDS3. National Skills Development Strategy 3.
Mm-hmm. What? Can you spend a few seconds on it?
Yes. I think this slide begins to say that. Although we've had the success, Jay, under NSDS2, we've now translated that success into going to NSDS3. Now, our success under NSDS3, for the first year, we ran under NSDS3. The National Skills Development Strategy is a total mind shift away from NSDS2 and NSDS1. NSDS 1 and 2 was very quantitative. It looked at numbers. NSDS 3 refocuses and it looks at impact. What kind of impact are we doing? We look at South Africa as a developmental state and begin to play a role in it as a CETA. Now, if one looks at the purple quadrants there, that were our targets. The green are the different successes we've made. In terms of learnerships, quickly, just numbers, 2,400 we've put through. In terms of skills programs, 3,800. Bursaries, 130 into scarce and critical skills in engineering. Unemployed learners entered 3,600. Unemployed learners completed 2,500. Unemployed skills programs completed. We do not focus for unemployed really on much skills programs. It's for the employed. But you would see that we did about 550, which were intermediary skills. On the next slide, Chair, we look at the artisans, which is the role features we have to play as a feature.
I'm sorry, I'm sure honorable members will agree with me. Can you go back to the previous slide and take it slowly?
Okay. I'm looking at time, Chair.
No, I understand. That's why I'm giving you that last round. This is very interesting. Please,
okay.
Take it easy here. Yeah.
Okay. Right. A bit more slower then, Chair. As I said, employed skills programs... On the first graph, these are employed learnerships. Employed learnerships completed. Our target was 1,040. We completed 1,650. Employed skills programs, 1,500. We completed 2,000. Employed skills programs entered 3,120 was our target. We entered 3,830. I must also add, Chair, and Energy CETA will say this. We are... In revenue income, the largest CETA. Our income is just under R1 billion last year. Our income was about 950 million. And therefore, we had an opportunity to enter more learners by doing so. I want to put that into context, otherwise it looks differently. In terms of unemployed learners entered, our target is 2,250. We entered 3,600. Unemployed learners completed 1,400 target, we completed over 1,000 there, 2,544. So in bursaries entered, Chair, unemployed bursaries entered, very important for us, getting into that program. 6 years ago, we had 9 learners at university that we sponsored. This year, we sponsored 230 unemployed, and 270 of the previous years have completed. Quite a high success rate. Unemployed bursaries completed, 42, 43. Internships, and this is a program we really battle because we need companies to be involved here. We cannot do it without companies. It's learners who go through universities of technology programs and need the practical P1, P2. We managed to, our target was 100, we entered 142. Can I move to the next slide, Chair?
As long as the higher education will explain to us the difference between learnerships and internships at the end.
Okay. Thank you, Jay. Our employed artisans entered, Jay, was 1,600 was our target. We entered 1,983. Our employed artisans completed a target of 686. We completed 1,180. I must add here, Chair, we've just done an impact analysis of what have we done. And 44% of artisans in NSDS2 came through Mercita's program. It was enrolled through Mercita. 44% of the entire country artisans that were completed. I think the Department of Higher Education can answer that one at the end. So what we've done, we've gone into a niche that we say our task is to train the artisans of this country. Unemployed artisans entered 2,400 was our target, and we've entered 3,185. Our target for completed 1,714, and we completed 3,012. Workplace experience share, I think that's a question you've asked for. 600, we entered 902. We also have partnerships with CETAs, with FET colleges. Our target was 8, we've gone into 10, we can now report that we're on 14 currently. Chair, we also looked at cooperatives. Very important how we get cooperatives going. And here, I must say, we've just done a research again, and we're not very happy, because gone are the days of thinking cooperatives are a group of black women in some rural area who've got to get beads together and weave them together, and that's the cooperative. We take our cue here from studies seen in India and Brazil. Why can't the taxi industry, the taxi owners, own a cooperative? They own the panel beating shop, they own the repair shop, and the supply shop of parts, and use that as a cooperative. Rather than look at these cooperatives as small little businesses, it could be a mega business. So we are re-looking at our cooperative model. Our small business support, 2,100 is our target. We've reached 2,572. NGOs, CBOs, non-government organizations, and so on, and non-levy paying, we worked on 12 last year. Our target was 10. Career guidance chair, we've established a unit within Mercita with a unit head that does career guidance. We've partnered SACWA, SECDA, NYDA, and currently with Western Cape Education Department and Gauteng City Regional Academy, GCRA. So that was a pilot, but we've reached 2,047 learners. Our large firms, we make quite good progress on this, over 600 companies, our medium firms, 1,058 success, and our small firms, those are our levy paying firms. There's a difference between our small business support and our small business, small firms. What we mean with small business support is getting into the locations and working with the panel beater or the mechanic, the backyard mechanic, working with them and making sure that they get the necessary skills. Can I step off here, Chair? Thank you. What are our current initiatives for year two under NSDS3? Chair, our success, I think, was focused on the way we saw the organization. We moved away from believing that NSDS2 organizational structure can run an NSDS3. So we got into a new organizational structure and a new way of running the organization, what we simply call a matrix approach. So we've got 8 programs. One is administration, skills planning, increasing access to occupational directed program, promoting our responsiveness to our FETs, both in the public and private sector, addressing low-level skills, youth skills, that's our need learners, not in employment, education, and training, around numeracy and literacy. We sometimes find learners have matric but cannot do the necessary math or cannot read. And we built in programs what we call a foundation learning certificate to get you into an apprenticeship or a bridging program to get you into engineering. We also do the promote workplace skills development within our sector. We encourage support for cooperative small enterprises and then the career development. Program 2, the skills planning, is an important one for us. If we do not get skills planning right, we can train a million welders and it has no meaning to the economy. We have to understand what the economy is like. And for that particular reason, we've gone down to local economic development as well as provincial or regional economic development and then factor that into our efforts, into our sector skills plan. What are our challenges really? Our challenges is that NSDS3 does request relational thinking. It looks about developing of human beings, of human development of South Africa. We have to think about education in a synergized way. We can't think of it compartmentalized. We've got to look at from primary school right up to what happens in post-school education. Because if maths and science is neglected at primary school level, we fail it at a post-school situation. For that reason, we got involved in grade 10, 11, and 12 in a number of provinces to improve maths and science. Learner mobility, access, and the redress, specifically with skills development, is an important aspect going forward. Chair, if we look at our skills, very quickly, the SIFS program, it's about leadership. If we don't have the proper leadership in CETAs, that's our board and so on, we're bound to fail. We can tell you that our chair is Pindilene Zimandi, she is also CEO of the NERSA. And we've got a very good board. And I think that brings the success of Mercita. Good policy environment, financial sustainability, reasonable returns on investment of learning and training. Excellent project planning management is needed for going forward. Implementation, operational, and maintenance capacity is important. Corporate governance and risk management is at the order of the day for getting success. Jay, I just took this slide just to illustrate to you what happens when you do not have correct people. 50% of programs only reach the success, if I look at that next slide, in local government. Why? And you can, Alison Lawless attributes it to the lack of skills. So skills is important to us. I'm not going to go into all of that. I think it's important, Chair, that we look at the private sector and what a developmental state is. If we want to build it and skill it later, we'll do it like we did the stadiums. Build the stadiums and leave with no skills in this country. It's imperative that we do skill people while we're building our future. So I simply take a quote from the president who says, the massive investment in infrastructure must leave more than just power stations, rail lines, dams and roads. It must industrialize the country, generate the skills, and boost the much needed job creation. How do we do that? We've got to start looking at short-term, medium-term, and long-term. I think giving CETAs a five-year term is just too little. You just can't produce skills in a long-term. In the short-term, it's up to 2014, medium-term up to 2017, but we must begin to look at the 2030 plan, in line with what Minister Manuel is doing in planning. Very quickly, Zalshare, just showing one little program, ESCOM, where we're involved in, Energy, Transnet, Sunrail, Prasa, and so on. Those 74 programs require 1,057 engineers, 3,171 technicians, 8,800 artisans, clerical support, and elementary workers over 13,000. So how do we begin to look at this? It's important how do we begin to drill down and look at what skills do we need at which time. So that's important that CETAs begin to do that and work together. I think it's also looking collaboratively and at everything, a holistic approach towards skills development. You cannot only train technicians, you've got to look at the governance, HR skills and so on, the legal skills. Yes, Jay, and I didn't even get to what I was going to say. Right, what we're doing at Mercita in my 1 minute, as I did say, Mercita is in metal engineering, auto manufacturing, motor retail, tire manufacturing, and plastics industry. We cover those five industries. So you can see that green skills begin to play an important role in where we are. We've always looked at energy efficiency, we've looked at waste management, we're looking at green skills and the values that we can include in the newly developed program. As I said, we are signing an agreement with GIZ tomorrow, today. We are hosting a conference tomorrow, the first in South Africa on green skills and skills needed. The Deputy Minister of Higher Education will be the speaker there. 120 invitees, and we've invited other speakers. Our chair will also be addressing that particular conference. We have done in research share, and our agreement with GIZ is around research, how we can begin to look at levy-paying companies getting involved in skills development within green skills. Specifically green jobs and what it means. Here we are, have become the development quality partner to develop the wind turbine technicians program. We also have started to register building energy auditor training, BEAT. And we're also doing this to look at BEAT at our own building, replacing light bulbs and so on in the career development is another area we're looking at with SEQWA around this area. Chair, under Kulisile and Mudupi power stations, we developed 443 apprentices and qualified 415 who are still being in the program. We have sponsored a solar car with Volkswagen and Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University and Swan University, University of Technology, this whole solar, Cecil Solar Challenge, which is South African leg. And it's part of developing the next generation of engineers. We have a division in Mercita called the Innovation Research and Development Division. We work with TIA, and we're in the first stages of negotiating an alternative energy collaboration with Swan University of Technology. We're also busy with the solar-focused skills development in the East London area, in the IDZZ area. Thank you, Chair. I think I'll stop there. You gave me a minute, and I took two.
No, you caught us, because I couldn't stop you, because the last part actually was the area of focus. Thanks very much. Can you then move to speak to ESCOM? I suppose whilst ESCOM is settling, Mama Tebela, you were right. There is such a gross difference between the document that has been given us from the energy sector to what was presented. I'm sure they can negotiate during this with the committee secretary to rectify that. We definitely have to get the correct document, gentlemen. Over to ESCOM.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Babalaz Bulunga. I'm the group executive for human resources. Oh, by the way, Babalaz does not mean what you think. So if you speak Zulu, you'd understand that it means it's a revelation of what people did. Not necessarily the hangover.
Chair, yes, we have all my protection, Minister.
Thank you, Chair. Just for members to know that we are a company that has about 43,000 people, and our average stay in the company, people usually retire having completed over 30 years. Stay with ESCOM, and therefore that gives the context of skills that people acquire over the lifetime on their stay with ESCOM. Chair, I'm just going to zero in the main on the numbers rather than the stories that we've written. I think the members have looked at the background. Our skills focus is in total. We don't only deal with our own employees, but we also do the upstream sort of contribution. In other words, we get as far as preschool up to the matric level where we sponsor. In particular circumstances, we do adopt schools and promote math and science studies. And of recent times, we've also focused on gender issues because we realized at some point that it was too late to be looking for female engineers when we didn't sponsor the girl child to study math and science at school. And we have done that with great success, as we are going to see on our numbers and the details that we can share if members would want to see the details. How do I drive this? Okay, we're going to sort of speak about the learner pipeline. I'm going to go through the whole scheme, how we approach skills development at ESCOM, and the main focus is going to be sharing with the members the numbers. We have a target that we work towards for our internal learners. In other words, the people that we train and sponsor at universities and FET colleges for our own employment. The target for this year is 5,735, and so far we have exceeded that because our year end is March, so only done sort of two quarters were already done in terms of the learnership for our own youth. We also do them in terms of the different categories of skills. The engineering, for instance, we target to have 1,800 that we need to push through, and we've already exceeded that. Technicians, we target to have 700 of them, and as you can see that we have already achieved our target. When it comes to artisans, because we are still mid-year, we are very close to our target. We have to have 2,350. We've just done 1,944. And this basically relates on ongoing recruitment. And by the time we end the year on March 31st, 2013, we would have done our target share. We also sponsor other without having targets. We sponsor finance, accounting, and other project skills and other skills that are required in business. Okay, in the external, we were called upon by the shareholder to look at the strategic youth initiative, and we committed to have 5,000. This is over and above our own consumption, which is 5,735. So all in all, ESCOM has got a pipeline of 10,000 learnership that we deal with on every year. In other words, in every year as people qualify, we keep the 10,000 commitment that we have in terms of skills development.
External learners could be any profession, any sector.
We tend to look at marrying around, for instance, artisans, engineers, technicians, along what we use, because it's also required in the open market. And also to give experiential learning in terms of in our business, in the bulk, that's where we usually take them. For instance, this year we've got 2,500 that are within ESCOM, the external learners, and others are within our value chain supply chains, in other words, where we do the project, the new build in Gusile and Medupi and other places, and that's where we deploy them. So it becomes easier to deploy so that they get the work experience so that they can qualify if it's along the lines of the business that we, or the skills that we can accommodate within ourselves as well as within the wider ESCOM cloud, as we call it. Also, Chair, I'm going to come to these numbers because that's it becomes easier also to talk when you look at the demographics of the trainees or learners that we have. Within the artisan, for instance, you'll see that we have dramatically increased the intake of African, colored, and Asian in terms of our artisans as well as our technicians. Also, when you look at engineers, what is also going to be impressive, I think, in the coming years is the fact that our gender drive on these hard skills is beginning to increase, and there's a very good showing that is going to be coming through in the coming years. So, Chair, if you look at this slide, mainly the above one shows the males and the bottom one, it's very encouraging that on technicians, for instance, it's a huge success in enrolling women in the technical skills. And with a drive, we are looking at pushing more and more women taking on artisan sort of area. It's a social drive that needs to be done from a school level, because at the college level it becomes almost difficult if the kids have not been exposed and encouraged. That's why we get involved in the sort of school, the schools that we adopt and assist. We tend to push and socialize these careers early, where we have an impact. I thought we shared the demographics as far as age is concerned. Are all these people out on their pension? This basically shows that the majority of the engineers, the majority of technicians, are all the young people that are coming into the organization. Our drive in terms of employment, we tend to want to absorb the trainees or the technicians and engineers at the lowest level so that they grow with the company. That's why our graph on these skills looking as it does. In that, that's sort of like also showing that we are preparing for the future, in that the younger people coming in are skilled professionals. Chair, maybe you should cover that within ESCOM we have a college, the ESCOM Academy of Learning. We focus on ensuring that we close the gap, the competency gap, not only for our own employees, but also for the learners that come through in their first year. An engineer will spend time at our college as well as the artisans, and give experiential learning under the guidance of our college. We also look at professional services. For our own employees, we check on the job training, and the college is tasked to ensure that on the job training it's done effectively, because that's when our lifeblood in terms of operating efficiently comes from, with high competencies of our own employees. We do not only end there, we also focus on the leadership, because everything else at the end will depend on what type of leadership you have within the organization, and it has to be aligned to the challenges that face the organization, not an academic exercise done away from the organization. So we do focus very strongly on the leadership brand that needs to emerge from a company that is located within a developmental state. So we don't just do the hands, but we also look at the people that will lead this organization and hand over from one generation to the next. Che, I thought I should cover this part in that it forms the fundamental contribution for us in looking at upstream for the skills that are required later. So we contribute into the upstream in terms of even early childhood centers, and also look at supporting the programs that government is engaged with and ensuring that we provide certain facilities in schools and support teachers in various challenges that they do. In some schools that we adopt, we do sponsor even to pay for teachers for a while, like math and science teachers, particularly in rural areas where I think government finds it difficult to attract the teachers to stay, and where we can assist for a specific period, we do provide bridging assistance in certain schools, depending on the need that exists there. This we do through ESCOM Development Foundation. Chair, also the contribution we make is to team up with the FET colleges and provide particular assistance, such as experiential, where there are certain equipment that we donate to the FET colleges, so that at least the kids, when they are doing electricity, they can have access to wires and the other equipment that the FET colleges may not have. So that's some type of things that we do within the colleges, so that they are equipped with what the students are doing. Because I think in the past you would have students that have done electricity but have never seen what a transformer looks like. So we ensure that where we team up with the FET college, we provide the equipment that we can. We intend to cover the entire country. So if you don't see Limpopo, it's because we're just still working on, and the members shouldn't say we excluded their provinces. We do also sponsor advanced skills, whereby the tertiary education support programs, we look at existing sponsorship that cover new fields like renewable energy and energy efficiency. We also sponsor material science, where we are looking at mechanical and maintenance engineering. We also look at sort of like black academic development programs to develop black academics in the research area. When you look at the universities, you hardly find academics that are diverse, particularly when it comes to the type of business we are in. We also align our sponsorship to develop a pipeline of skills students in specific areas of our specialization within the country. Like, we do sponsor masters and PhDs. We have got specific programs with the universities where we partner with the universities, in particular for things that matter most in our operations. Just as an example, Chair, we sponsor what we call chairs in these universities. For emissions, for instance, we partner with the University of Northwest. On the combustion engineering, the University of Witwatersrand, and energy efficiency, Cape Town. The asset management, University of Pretoria. The renewable energy, Stellenbosch University, and so on and so forth. So we do specifically focus on areas that we partner with the universities to do research on specific areas and develop the deep skills in that area from an academic point of view while benefiting on our operations. Chair, I would say this is what we do. We do more, obviously, and all the details that may be required we would provide.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bulunga. Shall we get now Sapia? Okay, Sapia is not ready. South African Renewable Energy Council. Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members and colleagues. My name is Johan van den Berg. I'm the Interim Chairman of the South African Renewable Energy Council, and there are also one or two other people of the constituent organizations who might be able to answer questions if there are questions. Thank you for the opportunity to be here, and we are very serious about skills development, so we'd like to address the committee on that. In summary, I'll just talk a little bit about an overview of the renewable energy sector, where we are, where we're going, and why we need to qualify people and how many people we need to qualify. Then we'll look a little bit at who's doing what on industry level and also on project level. We'll talk a little bit about an idea we have for partnership between government and private sector and that some people in government seem to like. And we'll talk a little bit about additional funding. And then we'll talk about what is it that we need to do to make sure we need the skills. In other words, what do we need to do to make sure we have an industry? And then talk briefly about the road ahead. So essentially, South Africa renewable energy is a new sector. As a country, generally, we tend to be short of technical skills. In renewable energy as a new field, the same is true, maybe even to a larger extent. So we have a very good opportunity here to create high-level jobs. At the NEDLAC deliberations, where the South African Renewable Energy Council was really formed, the constituent organizations at this time, which is CESA, SAPIA, SASTELA, and SAWEA, and that really reflects mostly solar water heaters and energy efficiency, solar PV, solar thermal, and wind energy. We were asked to say what we could do in terms of job creation, and we did a projection at the time, and the following words which appear on the screen went into the Green Economy Accord, and that is that industry commits to the following job creation targets in the renewable energy sector by 2020, and we said 50,000 green jobs, of which approximately 6,500 will be engineers and technicians. So we need to create a lot of jobs, and a lot of them are high-skilled jobs. So if I can just start with to break it down from the South African Renewable Energy Council and look at the four organizations that presently make up the council and see what the members are doing, then I'll start with CESA, the Sustainable Energy Society of Southern Africa, and they do a lot of work in solar water heaters and similar installations. So if I can just maybe differentiate that from the other organizations, this is high volume installations at reasonably low cost of tens of thousands of rands at the most, and a big scale. And we know that the Green Economy talks, I think Accord talks about a million or so solar water heaters that we want to roll out. So CESA are working with the CSIR and the Department of Science and Technology to create a platform that will identify second and third tier manufacturers for the Eskom solar water heater rollout. Through this process, they tell me that there will be enterprise development and job creation will occur.
Second and third tier?
Chair, that unfortunately is the information that I received from them, and I'm unfortunately not able to give you more information on that. My apologies. And I think that will happen once or twice also in the, maybe further on. So they will do enterprise development and job creation, and they say that skills development and continuous education will be part of the initiative, and it will be monitored and measurable. That's important, and this came up in the previous stakeholder meeting that we had 2 weeks ago, that this will not just be something people talk about. It will actually be monitored and measurable. And then on the individual project level, some of the members are already doing pilot projects. Then if we go then to the large projects, which are typically grid-connected renewable electricity, where we have many fewer projects of a much bigger scale that can run into maybe billions of rands of cost to build one facility, that's initiatives. Well, I mean, I say yes, Sophia, Sustella, Sawaya, and that's more broadly for the five or six slides that will follow. But if I talk about the South African Renewable Energy Training Center, that's been driven by Green Cape, who's got a representative here today, CPUT, University of Stellenbosch, and I'm forgetting one other partner, GIZ is the other one. So this is an exciting opportunity. A lot of work has been done over a period of, I think, going up to almost 2 years now. And the plan is to build an 80 million rand facility at CPUT's Bellville campus. And this one will then be the South African Renewable Energy Training Center. And it will be a large building with big pieces of machinery inside, like, for instance, an actual wind turbine that hopefully has a few floors in it that people can see how to repair and so on. And this thing will be driven by a very large electrical motor because, of course, we cannot let the wind drive it inside the building, but the engine must still turn. There's been a funding request at DHET, and Sanedi has appointed an interim manager, and GIZ has provided very kindly additional funding. And then there's been an advert for a senior lecturer or researcher in wind energy at Stellenbosch University, and CPUT. This has not been filled as yet, but the search continues for the right candidate. Okay, then if we go down to project level, so we're saying people have bid to sell power to South Africa through Eskom, and it's a very extensive tendering process that has social development and skills development as one of its aims. Just by way of background, 1% of capital for each successful project developer is payable at financial close as a project development fee. And this can be, in a big project, 20 million rand. It's a lot of money. Our understanding is that the reason why this money is payable is to fund the costs of the program, and we, I think, reasonably happy with that. I'll come back to that. We think there may be a little bit of money left in the kitty. An additional spend in this procurement program is that successful applicants are required to spend 1.5% of turnover on socio-economic development within a 50-kilometer radius of where the project is happening. And I think this is a good idea. These are also large amounts, also of the same magnitude as the amount I just mentioned. And so even though this specific effort isn't coordinated because each developer will do as he thinks best in the specific case, independently, a lot of people are working on skills development at a local level. And I want to use an example, Chair, of what was not a very large project. It's about a 30 megawatt wind farm, so it's maybe 9 turbines or so, and that's maybe 4 or 5 times smaller than some of the other projects that are happening, just in wind and in other, also a lot of bigger projects in solar, thermal and solar PV. But this specific developer says that they will, over the 20-year period of the project, each year train 3 people in the environmental field and 3 in the technical field, and over the lifetime of the project that will add up to over 100 people that will be trained in a high-level job. And there are many more such examples. Of course, we don't have access to all that information because it's really submitted to the Treasury on a confidential basis, but I think this is a snapshot of something that happens on a broader level.
Okay, then at a South African level, renewable energy skills, what else is happening? Green Cape and GIZ and the Bavarian Western Cape Partnership are collaborating with the relevant CETA to create accredited courses for wind farm and PV maintenance. And I've relayed this as best it was relayed to me, but essentially to train people to do the maintenance on wind and PV. And the same is being planned for biodigesters. And then GIZ also did a skills audit on renewable energy skills needs in South Africa. Then, interestingly, just about a day or two before we were invited to come and present here, the discussion came up about whether there shouldn't be a partnership between government and industry to train people of whatever description. And this is an unfolding idea. But we think at the very least it should be possible to train the people to do the permitting and the licensing around renewable energy, but also maybe policymakers. And as an example of an initiative which I think was excellent, and the speaker that follows me was one of the delegates on that speaker, on that trip, was GIZ took about 15 South African people to Germany 3-4 weeks ago, some from municipalities, some from government, some from private sector. And the idea was, how do we create a more integrated permitting process and make it work better? And I was lucky to be one of them. I think it was a great success. Going forward, we think there should be a joint skills development program with government, and we'd be very keen to develop this. And then just on a slightly lighter note, the Wind Harbour Conference that the South African Wind Energy Association is hosting in Cape Town on the 22nd to the 24th of October will have, on the first day, a specific session on climate change, energy, and then wind energy, an hour and a half session, and it's aimed specifically at parliamentarians and at media. So this specific committee, I think, is deeply knowledgeable about energy, but if you want to, perhaps if the honourable members want to bring their colleagues from other committees, then they would be most welcome. Then at a municipal level, we think generally there's very good potential on a distributed level to create energy efficiency solutions and small-scale renewable energy solutions. However, at the municipal level, there's also a need for skills development. We have to evaluate grid connection applications there. We have to administer customer accounts. Maybe we're moving towards net metering. And so there's also a need to do that at municipal level. Then in terms of funding is always something that's required. We spoke about the project development fee above, and we're hoping maybe from that specific source of funding, if there's some money left in that program, in that fund, then maybe this can be rerouted into skills development, because the total amount paid by developers will be hundreds of millions of rands, and we are hoping the cost of administering the program is somewhat lower than that. So, Chair, if I can maybe just ask the bigger question, and that is, what do we have to do to make sure that we have an industry that needs the skills? And that's really very important, because we want to create the jobs. And, you know, we think that there needs to be a long-term and ongoing renewable energy market commitment in terms of the amount of energy that will be purchased each year for at least a medium term. And that will make the local firms spring up. That will make the international companies come and invest in South Africa and build manufacturing plants. And then we're pleased with the way in which our communication with government has improved and become even more efficient and productive, but we want to further improve that. So on the road ahead, we think if the round one projects that were procured can be closed by 30 September, this will create the big kickoff and the signal that we need, that there's going to be an industry. And the converse is also true. If we don't close them by then, we may have serious difficulties. And we will continue with the initiatives we've described. We will develop the partnership with government, and we will continue to look for additional funding sources. Then good news, if we can progress along the IRP route, this is a estimation of where South Africa may be in the global pecking order by 2015, and you see us about 10th in solar PV and about 15th in wind. So we would really be shooting up the pop charts, so to speak. And so there's a chance to become a very serious global player. If we roll that another 3, 4, 5 years forward in terms of the IRP, we would probably be looking even better. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Van der Beek. Thanks very much. That gives us some good light as to what the private sector is doing. The Association of Municipal Electricity Undertaking.
Speak from the perspective of the AMU. Maybe very different to some of the other speakers because I operate in the municipal environment and it's very different to some of the previous speakers we had. And also we are association for municipal undertakings. Just by some bit of sales talk there, we've been established in 1915, you've heard this many times before. We are a voluntary association where municipalities can belong to. And we consist of, or the members consist of, or represented by council and engineer members. And we provide technical support to SOLGA. And one of the committees that we operate at national level is the Education and Training Committee. Maybe just some of the headlines that have come out recently, and I think this is the reason why we are here today. Municipalities are in a state of paralysis. Africa is facing a chronic skill shortage. Electrical networks will follow in the next 3 years, here the other day. Average of 50% vacancy rate in electric departments. Average of 2 to 5 engineers graduates annually. If you compare that with the international market, it's but a drop in the ocean. Reduction in government employed engineers from 40% in 1990 to 15%, and that's a very serious stat. And the average age of electrical engineers in local government is around 58 years, and that comes from some of the EDI Holdings research which they have done on a sample of about 35 municipalities. Municipal skill development. Some of the challenges we face, obviously, is shortage of skilled staff, and the biggest impediment to adequate service delivery is the average vacancy rate of 50% of established posts, and that was also reported in some of the research that EDI Holdings had done. We found that there's a lack of suitably qualified instructors to train the learners going forward. And municipal, we believe that municipal distributors should have more flexibility in order to attract, employ, and retain skilled staff. What we find is that electricity departments are embedded in municipalities, and obviously the HR practices are done corporately, or the activities are done corporately, and we find that we don't get the departments, or the electricity departments in particular, do not get the necessary focus that we should have. And we find that in some metro municipalities, they have their own HR department within the electricity department, and we find that training is much easier in those municipalities. In the past, you'll know that a lot of municipalities have their own training facilities where they grew their own talent. Many of these facilities have closed down over the years for various reasons, shortage of funding, and also shortage of physical resources like buildings. Some of the challenges, exodus of skills, the aging workforce. Capacity for the transfer of skills to new recruits and trainees has been severely curtailed as people step out of the municipal environment because there's not opportunity to to fill those gaps quick enough to train people coming through the stream. Training funding, we find, as I said earlier, training is not a priority. We find that it's not a priority within the municipal environment. While some training funding for training may be provided, often the training cannot take place due to the lack of subsistence and travel funding. To explain that is, a lot of training happens in Gauteng, good training, a lot of subject-specific training, and some of them are even funded by some government departments. But to send incumbents to go on the training, we find that there's a lack within the municipal environment, a lack of subsistence to send the people away for a week. And subsistence would be your flight cost, your accommodation cost, etc. So there's a funding gap there. And also the approval process for training is also a very lengthy one within the municipal environment. We find that there is what we call the workplace skills plan that we must fill out every year, but we also find that not all the projects that are listed on there are never done or that doesn't come to fruition, and that's also because these things are run corporately, and we find in our experience that a lot of the training gets focused on the other skills rather than the technical skills. Remuneration. Competitors, including Eskom, attract critical skills in the market because of their competitive packages, and therefore municipalities cannot attract the necessary skills to deliver on the mandate. And that you can also find it on one of the previous slides I had, where we said that the municipal engineers' percentage has dropped significantly from about 40% to 15%. Some more challenges: slow bureaucratic municipal HR practices. Capacity for the transfer of skills to new recruits and trainees has been severely curtailed. Some of the challenges we find there is that when we know some people are going out on retirement, we have difficulty filling the post before the person goes out on retirement, because there's no blocks on the organogram, etc. So there's not opportunity for us to let the new incumbent work with the person that's going to retire. So that skill transfer window is not there for us. CETA responses. We find that the CETA, because we said are embedded in municipal environments, and CETAs would typically speak to, in our case, the LG CETA would typically speak to your HR department, and they don't really reach the departments, and especially the technical departments. So the technical departments also have them to work through the HR departments, and we find difficult to tap in directly to the CETAs. And what the AMU have done of recent is we've signed a memorandum of understanding with the LG CETA, where funding are channeled through to the AMU, and we call them for interested parties to join the government ticket, but more about that later. Cocktail initiatives. Some of the cocktail initiatives that's happening is the professionalization of local government and minimum standards for engineers, and we find that there's little focus on the electrical engineering side, and there's much more focus on the civil engineering side within all these initiatives that's coming from the tables of COPTA. Government ticket of competency, our experiences there is that there are limited institutions that provide training. Eskom has, in terms of their own or the plans, established at the Academy of Learning, and they train their own people. Unfortunately for us, they have allowed some of the AMU people to go onto the program, and we're grateful for that. Now, the government ticket is a necessary document for engineers within the local government environment to supervise electrical plant, and that's in terms of the Occupational Health and Safety Act. I just did a quick calculation on my way of the 30 municipalities in the Western Cape. There's only four of electrical engineers, graduated electrical engineers.
Come again?
I said of the 30 municipalities in the Western Cape, there's 25 local and 5 district, there's 4 graduate engineers, electrical engineers.
Four.
Four.
To look after
the same. No, they're embedded in the municipalities. Oh, yeah. So there's gaps in the other municipalities. Okay, training, the focus has largely been on artisan training, and there's the three training streams, the traditional artisan training, learnerships, and then the modular training. modular training, the visual artisans, we largely do, you know, to go to the next subject. It's also what municipalities also concentrate on is subject specific training for operating regulations for high voltage systems, plant operating, safety, GIS, etc. So there is some funding for that. And funding is largely from internal funding sources. The Western Cape government has, through the MIG funding, has given some municipalities some fundings over the last 3 or 4 years for training of artisans, which was a very, very successful program. And that was in terms of the modular training, what we call the M1 to M6 training. I find that these initiatives are not rolled out to other in other provinces. National Treasury funding, those municipalities have secured a 12 million grant for training there, and I'll speak more about that later. Department of Energy has also launched a placement program and with the INEP funding, they require municipalities to take on board a couple of, I think you can call them, interns. This was only available in the last round to metropolitan municipalities. They have promised that they will roll it out to other municipalities going forward. Then some of the success stories. City of Cape Town, in terms of our research, is doing the most for skill development. They've got an in-house training school, had it for years, and it's just gone from success to success. They've got 130, or rather they have trained 130 electrical artisans since 2006-07, and there's 70 of them is coming off line, off the conveyor belt, so to speak, in 2013. All these electricians, they find employment within the city. They have started this program because I don't know if you know, Chair, that how difficult it is when you advertise for an electrician post or for any technical post for that matter to attract people. In my personal experience, I go out about 3-4 times on advert to get people suitable for the position. They've also qualified 61 internal staff as electricians through his learners program in the same period. 90 apprentices from other disciplines, so from the water sector within the city, they train electricians from the water sector and other disciplines. They've also got a technician program where they have qualified to date 18, and a further 8 will come into the system in 2013. Also, they have an internal bursary program where they, in fact, I was also on a bursary program with the City of Cape Town way back, where they train graduate engineers and university. Engineers. They have also developed their own training material, because the municipal sector is a different animal to your construction sector. And we find from the CETA side, the training are focused on more construction type engineers, while the municipal sector needs distribution engineers, and ESCOM has gone down similar. They've also sort of developed their own training materials. Mentoring within Cape Town, there's a graduate intern program where they would link a graduate engineer that has come fresh off the benches to an engineer in the city, and the engineer will typically take his hand and take the program through, or rather the incumbent, to extra registration. And they've got a further 3 coming off stream in the following years. In Buffalo City Municipality, they have no training school, but they have cooperative agreements with training centres within East London. They also secured an infrastructure development grant for 2013, and these are some of the numbers. They've got 1 engineer, certificated engineer 1, technician 4, and artisans 10. In service training to students who have completed the S4 qualification and the practical training for graduation. So they take people that have studied but need the opportunity for training. So they take some of these people on board. They do on average 10 a year. There's also a training program for employees on the learnership program, and they operate a formal mentorship program where they also take the hand of the incumbents and sort of take them through the paces. Mang Hoang municipality, or Centlek is the utility, has a training school. And the training provided for a number of learners, and these are some of the stats that they have given through. In 2009, they've trained 232 people, 2011-12, 208, and all the different training streams. Encouraging to see all the engineers that come off the bench, 2011-12, 5 engineers. George Municipality alluded to it earlier, has received $12 million from infrastructure development program for over 3 years, and the intention is to employ interns. They're busy, there was an advert recently for that, and to train 10 artisans per year, and then also to use the funding for subject-specific training within the municipality. What the AMU does is association. Historically, we have provided bursaries to students, and we found that since we don't have an operational office with staff in, it became administratively difficult for us to administer. We have then given it over to the universities to administer. So we give an allocation of funding to the universities, and they can allocate it to some students. And again, I've alluded to the LGC, the funding. We've signed an agreement with them to fund a certificate of competency or engineers to go on a certificate of competency training, and we do it together with ESCOM, and again we thank ESCOM for having allowed us space to go into the program, and we do about 6 per semester. Again, the problem with this is when all these training are done in Johannesburg, and some of the other provinces, people lose out because again the municipality cannot provide the S&T to go out to through to Gauteng. Mentor the program, the AMU also as an association nationally doesn't have a mentoring program, but we find that these mentorships are being run by individual municipalities where when they take people on, they coach people to get through to the professional status. And we're very glad for the Municipal Infrastructure Support Agency that has come up with a program to facilitate the mass rollout of these infrastructure programs going forward. So and we just hope that they learn from some of the lessons that Energis has learned. Energis was a sort of program in about 2007-08 where they wanted to do similar things as MISA is now intending to do, but when they got to the municipal environment, they found that the municipal system within municipalities doesn't facilitate what they intended to do. And I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Roger. I might as well say that through too late thinking, we invited MISA very late.
Yeah,
they couldn't make it because we, on a last thought, we realized that MISA could also contribute a lot in this environment, although it's a young baby. Thanks very much.
And also, Chair, I think maybe LDC should have been here, and maybe SALGA as well.
SALGA has got a special conference
This
week, so obviously it's automatic, when you want to have a clear municipal perspective, not so honourable members, because SALGA is able to give us a sort of a global picture of what municipalities are doing in any sphere, particularly in the training. But at least to quite an extent, it has been helpful for the association at least to give us an overview of what is taking place at municipal level, grim as it may be.
Yeah.
Okay, bye then, Minister.
Thank you, sir.
Sapia's chair is not here, honourable members, but we can't wait. Shall I open it now for questions, comments, and clarification? Honourable Mloto, followed by Dade Lucas, Matibela, for now.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just
Honorable Grayling, who has decided to turn official.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is directed to the energy and water sector. I just want to establish whether you have done any that determine the relevance of the skills that the your CETA is developing with the industry to find out, to establish whether those skills are relevant to the industry? Are you getting any feedback from the industry with regards to their relevance? The second question would be on, you alluded to the fact that there were some corporate governance lapses in the past, and you are now embarked on focusing on the control environment. Can you shed some bit of light on what steps have you taken to strengthen the control environment within your organization? And lastly, what lessons have you learned from that exercise, and what areas require further attention?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we'll all agree that the skills training is absolutely necessary. And I must say now that I think we are getting left behind because time just going and going and going, and we're doing a lot of talking. And I think we should be split. Municipalities, for one, is that some time ago, every little municipality had a workshop, it had a facility, but then now recently you find most of them have closed down and have done a lot of outsourcing. And I think this makes it more difficult, because when it's outsourced, it's difficult to control. Because the person you've outsourced to also is cutting corners. He's the one to spend too much because he needs to make a profit out of the whole deal. So, and he can bring in people who are not being trained. So, well, that is nice. Light energy saving, that's good. the thing that, Mr. Chair, if we take places like Cuba had this restriction of not being able to import. What you found out, the skills were trained. Then because they had to keep their own cars on the road. And so the people were trained in this. So these are the kind of things. And in here in South Africa, we look at the motor industry. When you were if you were trained 30 years ago, it's difficult to fit in now, because it's a complete different story. Because a more technical, and so there is a vast difference. And then you call the motor mechanics technicians now. They no more call motor mechanics. So there's a big difference. And I think the motor industry, ESCOM, those are grounds where many people can be trained. I'm sure ESCOM still got that huge workshop they had. I'm hoping they're still using it, because that was something that was highly advised, because that's where it was on the job and the people were doing things. And you could see it happening. And immediately they were employed. Now, and the other thing was, at one time we were running away from apprenticeship. And I think that was a disaster. Because I guarantee you, it takes a time to train someone to be fully qualified. And if you think you can do that in 3 weeks or in 3 months, you're just fooling yourself. The person just knows one thing, and that's where it goes, and that's where you say, these people can't learn. It's not that people can't learn, they're not being trained properly. And I think if we train people, we must train them properly, and I feel very... I like the subject, that's why I feel so much about it, and I know what can happen. And if the other thing is that, which is very important, Mr. Chairman, is to make people understand that you're not to be a doctor or a surgeon or a dentist. You can be a plumber. You can be a motor mechanic. Because you're just as the plumber is just as important as the dentist. And in cases, some of these people who are trained properly make more money than these other guys. But
we don't educate our people. All we say, no, you need a degree here, and you must do this here. So you move this thing far away. You get it far away. I'm not against people being educated and getting degrees. I'm saying that a person with a good matric pass can be a good artisan. That I can guarantee you. I think I'll stop there. Okay. Thank you.
Member Tibet.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to go to ESCOM. And I think ESCOM is doing a good thing of preschools. That's a wonderful thing, because when you are still young, underage, that's when you really start learning and get used to. Unlike starting people in matric and say they will be trained from matric. But when they are still there at preschool, that's where the focus lies. My question, though, is how many provinces have you got with the preschools, or are you finding at the preschools? How many provinces? The other one I just wanted to add about the 3 months training. It really doesn't work, because we know we had this training colleges which were training people. They are there from matric, they continue, but after they go out, they can't go. When they go to a factory, that person is an electrician, a trained electrician for 3 years. But when those people come there, they must be taught by the company where they are. So I think by training and monitoring the people, that will really help to be sure that our people are really working. I must say something about my grandson, was at University of Cape Town, and he's been with High Flow Company. He is doing very well. That's his fourth year with High Flow. He is doing very well, because he was at school and holidays he was at High Flow doing practicals. If we can really go into that, people will really know, because some of the people, like Honorable Lucas said, are not there for books, but handwork, the mind works better than when you sit down with a pen and pencil. So I think the sitters are doing well, but only to follow that, so that we can be sure of our data and be sure where to find people, because I hear here that it's difficult to find people, to employ people. A person retires or a person leaves the job, maybe sick or so. It takes months before that space can be filled. But if we know that we've got these people here, then it's easy. We won't struggle to have people to fill up posts. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Freddy?
No.
Okay, ma'am mentioned.
Thank you, Chair. Mine is specifically to ESCOM. It was 2009, it was reported that ESCOM, especially Quebec nuclear plant, is losing skilled engineering due to age. They are retiring. As a result, there was a concern that a Quebec power plant will be having difficulties if they lose engineers at that rate. Are they training especially on nuclear, people being trained especially on nuclear, the engineers at Quebec? on ESCOM, not COVID.
In fact, linked to that, we also expected NEXA to be here to articulate the nuclear energy side. And amongst other things, that's the reason why I still want to do some consultation about the department not having declined to come and make a presentation, because we wanted to know exactly what is happening in various sectors of the energy field. Prof?
Thank you, Chair. I have just one question for energy and water sector. Following their own comment, unfortunately we don't have pages here or numbers for the slides. On trades and wiremen licenses, there says trades workers registered is 139. On their own admission, that is very low. I'm curious to know, why is it that low? If I cross over to ESCOM, I'm putting on my middle drift cap now for my place, trying to push ESCOM to my area. What did I tell them when I go to my constituents on Monday? In page 5 in ESCOM, you have all those figures there, for example, about internal learners, barristers, numbers, and what have you. That draws me to my constituency. Can I say on those figures that you have there, there's something that is happening in around my area? On your page 14, again, on the same way of thinking, you have ESCOM centers, not page 14. You are referring to the early childhood center. Again, when you are in an area like the area where I am, when you are saying you are supporting, that is page 15. Early childhood centers to assist by providing equipment learning. These are some of the questions that we get day in, day out with our constituencies. How do we access that? I'm going to page 15 you talk about Science Expo. Again, there with the youth that we have and the schools that we have and FT colleges that we have, that was your page 15. How does one become part of that? When I look at your page 18 and that list of universities that you have there, I do not know whether you are going to the established universities because they have the resources to do what you have to do, or is there any normal tendency on your side to try to assist even other universities? I don't see some of the universities unless there's something that is hiding somewhere. I take you to page 21. Again, my interest, your very first comment on page 21, to adopt schools around the university that will serve as a feeder for my teacher in science and mathematics. Middle Drift is around 40. Middle Drift is around FD colleges. How do I push this to be practical and relevant in my constituency? Thank you, sir.
Ask a question that has already been asked.
Micro, please.
My apologies, Chairperson. I might perhaps ask a question that has already been asked. But the general challenge that we have as South Africa is the relationship between our education system with the needs of society, economically, socially, and culturally. What informs the numbers and the figures that the various presenters have made in respect to mining, manufacturing, agriculture, energy, and when I talk energy, I'm talking skills related to petroleum, related to gas, and related to electricity, and generally in the commercial field. Because the skills we produce must be able to speak to our economy. And how is that related? Is there a paternalistic approach that attempts to address these skills as a shortage in the economy or in our social development, our legal development, or our human or resource development, and our cultural heritage in South Africa? That question to me is very fundamental than to develop skills that thereafter. In other words, when they finished training people, where do these people go to? Do they just get certificates and become the unemployed? Or how do we move at that? I'm happy that the Department of Higher Education is involved in this, and I know that the minister has several times mentioned in his speeches that the education system of South Africa must speak to the economy. Thanks.
Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, let's take a break. Allow the presenters to prepare their responses and come back. Thank you. Let's 15 minutes, please. Okay.